Yeah, I just want to go a little off sequence today because there's a very, very interesting explanation that the Vilna Gaon gives connected to benching. So it's actually relevant to the Parsha of the week, right? We read that this Parsha is the source of benching, and that is because V'yachalta v'savata v'erachta, you should eat, and when you're filled up, v'erachta Hashem Elokecha, you must give a bracha to Hashem, right? So brichas hamazon is considered to be a doraisa requirement. Technically, it's only if you're full. If you only eat a piece of bread, that's a rabbanan dekachiyah. If you eat, you're full, then it becomes doraisa. So the Gra has a very, very interesting explanation. It's a little technical, but this goes back, if you look at Perek Chafes, chapter 22, and this is Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Actually, this is also a relatively well-known Pasuk. Tov Ayin, Hu Yevorach, Ki Nasan Milachmo Ladol. So again, it's important whenever you learn a Pasuk to first try to see what it literally means. Sometimes we only know it from the Gemara's drushes and everything else, and without, you know. So that's one of the major services Art Scroll does, because in the Agadita portions, which has a lot of psukim, they'll tell you what the pasuk. You know, that's a good thing, because, well, again, I had to be marach in a long thing. You know, Pirkei Avos gives an ideal sequence for this, for the learning of Torah, which almost nobody follows today. And that is from the age of five. You learn a Chumash, and that includes Nevi'im and Ksuvim, Tanakh. And you do that for five straight years. No Mishnah, no Gemara. Right? From 5 to 10, all you do is learn the Chumash over and over and over and over and over again. And then from age 10, you begin to learn the Mishnah, which is the foundations of the oral law. And you just do for the next 5 years, 10 to 15, just Mishnah, 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 and you review your Chumash. And you don't even start Gemara until the age of 15 years old. Now, I understand in North America, many people start Gemara after that age, but in the regular world where people are raised religious, nobody starts Gemara at 15. They start Gemara much, much younger. But you see why Chazal said it this way. Chazal said it this way because a person needs to build on a foundation. You know, you start learning all sorts of complicated Gemara, but you don't have the knowledge of Mishnayos and Chumash, you're not really going to understand. And even now, how much time do we spend? I include myself. It's not wasting time, but how much time do we spend because we don't understand, you know, what a certain Mishnah, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah or a Braisa. Right? So we could spend half the morning Seder, you know, trying to figure out what this Mishnah, what this Braisa is. I mean, imagine if before you even learned Gemara, you knew the basic explanation of all the Mishnayos. That'd be a tremendous thing. So, as a result, when you learn Agadita especially, Agadita is often interpreting verses, but it interprets verses by word plays, by puns, by unusual interpretations. So, we often might remember the unusual interpretation, but we actually don't know what the pasuk means in context. So, this is going to be an example of this. Let's first translate the pasuk, and then we'll see how the Chachamim darshan it, and add something onto the pasuk that wouldn't be evident. So what is Tov Ayin? Tov Ayin means a person with a good eye. Now that doesn't mean he has good eyesight. It's not referring to that. But Tov Ayin, or Ayin Tov, is the characteristic of generosity and benevolence. That when I look at somebody, I want to help them. I care about them. The opposite of Tov Ayin, or Ayin Tov, is of course Ayin Ra. And Ayin Ra, translate the evil eye, but it basically just means when I look at somebody and I don't want to help them, I'm unhappy when they're successful. I begrudge them their hatzlacha in life. So a tov ayin, a person who looks at others with a generous eye, is a kindly disposition. He's benevolent. He wants to help people. Hu yivorach. He will be blessed. Now, he will be blessed by whom? So there are two equally plausible interpretations. One interpretation is, of course, people will bless him. And when we look at a Tov Ayin, people are so grateful to him because he always wants to help people. He always is happy when people are masliach. So a person who is of a generous, benevolent disposition shall be blessed by others. And of course, the second explanation, which is even more important, is they shall be blessed by Hashem. A tovayin will be blessed by Hashem. Why? Ki nasan milachmo ladol, he has given from his bread to the poor and the needy. So the point of the pasuk, just a simple pshat, is a well-known idea that we think that when I give to others, I'm giving, I'm losing. Right? I'm losing. I had something and I'm giving it away. We say the opposite is the case. By giving away things to help people, you're going to receive the blessing. You're going to get the blessing because you've helped people that need it. Okay? So, in fact, what do they say? They say that the only thing you take with you when you die is that which you gave away. Whatever you keep, you don't take with you. And whatever you give away, you do take with you. You understand the idea? The idea is that all the stuck and the chesed that a person does, that is what they take with them when they die to Olam Haba as their zechus. All the stuff you try to keep for yourself when you die, you don't, it doesn't go with you, right? So you keep what you give away, and you wind up giving away what you try to keep, because you die with all your wealth, it goes to somebody else. Sometimes the Internal Revenue Service or whatever it is. It's not even your children. They tell a cute story. Actually, I'm not sure. It's kind of almost like an urban legend, so I'm not 100% sure it's true, but some people say it actually happened. There was a very wealthy family in Toronto, great, great Balei Tzedakah, the Reichman family. You may have heard of them. They're really world famous for all of their tzedakah. So the patriarch of the family was Nifter a few years ago, and he left in his will a very strange instruction. He left in his will two things. He says, I'm leaving a letter not to be opened for 30 days after I die. And he wrote a letter that was sealed. And the second instruction is, I want you to request from the Chevra Kadisha that when I'm buried in black, my favorite black socks that I wear in Shabbos. All right, so normally you don't bury every person is buried in the same white shtachbisha. You put on your own individual clothes. But they went to the Chevra Kadisha, they said, this was our father's last request. He wanted to be buried in these socks. And the Chevra Kadisha said, no. But this is Reichman, he's a billionaire. It's nothing. The answer is, we don't do it. So they were really tzibrachin because they felt, for whatever reason, this was their father's last request, and they just couldn't do anything about it. So anyway, 30 days comes, they open up the letter, and the letter says, I anticipate that you asked the Chevra Kadisha to let me be buried in my socks, and my guess is they obviously said no. The reason why I made this strange request is I want you to realize that in spite of the wealth that Hashem has blessed us with, when it's our time to leave the earth, we cannot even go with a pair of socks. You just say, the whole thing was an exercise. He set it up ahead of time. As if to say, there is none of your wealth that's going to help you in Olam Haba. All you take with you is the tzedakah that you give. Right? So that's the simple meaning of this pasuk. That by giving, we don't lose. By giving, we gain. And of course, keep in mind that, this may sound theoretical to you guys, or to me as well, because we don't have a lot of money to be giving around. So we're not like big givers. But keep in mind that, giving has many, many different dimensions. You give of your time to somebody. You give of smiling to somebody, being pleasant to somebody. That's also something that you give to a person. So everybody can be a giver. Some people do have the ability to give money. But the truth of the matter is, in Hilchos Tzedakah, there's a very famous Rambam, where the Rambam enumerates the levels of giving tzedakah. The highest level of tzedakah is when you teach somebody a job so they can make a parnasa. That's the highest level. And then it goes down. Then there's anonymous giving. But if you look, the Rambam rates higher. Giving less with a pleasant demeanor is greater than giving more with an unpleasant. Like you throw the money at the person, get out of here, you're a bum. Even if you give them a lot of money. I'm sure something ringing. Is there a phone or something? I don't know. Something's ringing. I don't know if it's, I don't know if that's anything. Okay. So that's the point. The point basically is that that's how you give. Also, you give by the kindness, by the pleasantness of the way you relate to a person. It's also a way that we give. So even if you're only giving a shekel or less or whatever it is, you can do it in a derech eretz type of way. It's an nisayon. It's an nisayon. I remember when I was a rabbi of a shul. So we had many, many people every day, mainly from Israel, because unfortunately, Eretz Israel, the economy, at least for Haredim, is usually pretty bad. And, now it's a little better than it was, but on one hand, it's worse because of the government cutbacks, although the economy is getting better. And sometimes you would have, 10, 20 people coming. And the truth of the matter is, by the time you get to 15 or 16, you're not very patient. On the other hand, think about it. Number 15, it's not his fault that there were 14 people before him. Each person is a new person, and they shouldn't be punished because there were 14 other people. So it's an Isayan, and sometimes you run out of money. That's true, but you still treat a person with kavod. It's like a very, very big Isayan. Okay, there's a maisa they tell like this. There's a maisa they tell about the altar of the Vardik. And I think we talked a few weeks ago about the different Musar personalities, or we saw Solander's Talmidim, and they all went by the name Alter, the old man in Yiddish. So the most extreme of his Talmidim, biographically it's the most interesting, was the Alter from the city of Novardik. He was quite an extremist. In fact, at one point in his life, he literally bricked himself into a house for 2 years that he couldn't escape. Just imagine, it's like a horror movie, like an Edgar Allan Poe story. He was in a house, and he wanted to concentrate for 2 or 3 years on just Torah and Avodah. So he basically bricked up all of the exits. He was like stuck in this house. There were two holes in the wall, and people would give him food. And why two holes? What's wrong with one hole? One for Milchix, one for Fleishix, because he didn't even know it. And he was given the name in the Vardik as Rav Yaisel, Yosef Yaisel is Baal HaChorim, the master of the holes. Now, some Rabbanim in the Vardik thought he was nuts. They thought he was crazy. And they went to the Rav of the Vardik, who was a great, great Gadol, one of the Gedolei Ador, the Aruch HaShulchan. Have you heard of the Aruch HaShulchan? The Aruch HaShulchan was the great, great posek. In fact, in Europe, people tell me, before World War II, the Aruch HaShulchan was a more definitive posek than the Mishneh Berurah. It's only later years that Chafetz Chaim Sefer became the definitive thing. The Aruch HaShulchan was a great, great posek. So they went to the Aruch HaShulchan and they said, "This guy is crazy. Let's tear down the house." And the Aruch HaShulchan said, "No, it's an unusual derech. It's not our derech, but he's a tzaddik. Let him do what he did." So for 2 years, he was already a widower. He had lost his wife a short time before, so there was no shalom bayis issue involved. But for 2 years, he's like a hermit, concentrating on Torah, Avodah. He doesn't leave the house, for 2 years. He can't leave the house for 2 years. At the end of the time, I don't know how he arranged it, he was released from his self-imposed confinement, and he was like a cannonball. He then went and he found it in the middle of Stalinist Russia. He founded over 100 yeshivas, the Vardik yeshivas.
Wow.
Like he was storing up that spiritual energy to be able to create Torah. And his Talmidim were fearless. I mean, I have to say that the two Torah institutions that existed, now you have to remember Stalinist Russia, if somebody was caught teaching Torah in Stalinist Russia, they would either be shot or sent to Siberia for life, which was really almost the same as a death. It was extremely dangerous to teach Torah. And not only that, but they would even put Jewish spies, the Evseksia, I think it was called. They were the Jewish communists, and their job was to infiltrate shuls and yeshivas. So Stalin didn't care if old people, people in their 80s, went to shul. They were going to die out. But if anything was done with younger people, Mamish, it was an awful, awful thing. So the two institutions that continued to be Marbit's Torah in the middle of the Stalinist persecutions were Chabad. Again, we have to give, I know Chabad is controversial, but we have to give Chabad credit for continuing because the Rebbe was in Stalinist Russia. but he was imprisoned. And the other one was Novardik. Novardik established hundreds of yeshivas in the middle of Stalinist Russia. In fact, they tell a beautiful story about, I'm going to get back to Alfred Novardik because we'll connect to his pasuk, but just to digress for a moment. This is the what they call the Friedeker Rebbe, maybe not the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, Reb Nachum Mendel, but his father-in-law, Reb Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, that he, they tell the factual story. He was having a Purim Suda. And of course, all the shades are drawn, you know, because so nobody should see what's going on from the outside. And the Rebbe starts talking in the middle about how Stalin is a Russia, and like, come on, he's going to have his downfall, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give a Yeshua for Am Yisrael. And in the middle, there's some, know that some guys are in the back there who are these Jewish communists, you know, who are going to inform. And they keep on telling the Rebbe to, maybe the Rebbe should keep quiet right now. And the Rebbe said, you know, he didn't care, he kept on talking. And at some point he got so involved, and so passionate, he opened his shirt and he said to these guys in the back, he says, if you want to kill me now. Because I will die on Kiddush Hashem before I deviate from a single word of the Torah. He said, kill me now. And then there was a whole scene because his mother was in the other room. She came in and she started crying. Whatever, it was a whole big maisa. And there was a time shortly afterwards he was called into questioning by the KGB because of this. Again, it wasn't so much the speech that he gave, but the problem was that he was talking about Chadorim, and they wanted to know names, they wanted to know addresses, they wanted to know where these secret schools were, and he wasn't going to tell. I mean, that's what they wanted. They wanted to know the information about who are his emissaries. You don't even realize how dangerous this was. And when the Rebbe said, I'm not, you know, you can do what you want to me, but I'm not going to give you any information about anybody else. So this guy pulls out a gun. This sounds like a bad movie, but this actually happened. The guy pulls out a gun and says, this little thing makes a lot of people talk. It sounds like a line from a movie. This little thing makes a lot of people talk. So the Rebbe says, the people who are scared of guns believe in many gods and only one world. You believe in only one world, this world, so you're afraid of many different gods, communism, or whatever it is. So the gun scares you. But I believe in one God and two worlds, so this doesn't scare me. Very, very amazing. But going back to Novardik, Novardik was the other great, great koach that was in Stalinist Russia. The Stipler, although the Stipler was a Talmud of the Novardik Yeshiva. In fact, the Stipler later became, before he came to Eretz Israel, the Stipler came to Eretz Israel in the 1930s, before the World War II. But he was a Rosh Yeshiva, Novardik in Europe. He was a young Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz was not Novardiker at all, but he is the grandson of the Elder of Novardik. His father was, Rabbi Fall Shmulevitz was the Elder's son-in-law. So Novardik was quite remarkable. And one of the things, you'll see, I have to remember to connect this because I have a reason why I'm telling you this story. Sometimes I forget the connection with our focus. So the thing is that, so the Novardiker Shita was Emunah. Hashem will give you what you need to carry out your mission. There is nothing to be afraid of. You have to have absolute, unconditional Emuna, and Hashem will open doors to you. This was his idea. And because of this, he had all sorts of exercises among his Talmidim, some of which didn't make a lot of sense, but he wanted them to learn the idea of Emuna, and not being embarrassed, not being afraid, not being ashamed. So the story goes, he would tell his Talmidim to go into grocery stores and ask for shoes, or go into a shoe store and ask for milk. So some people thought, so as a result, Novardiker's got a reputation of being crazy in some circles. I mean, among from Jews. But what was the point of this? The point is, because how many times, you know, let's say you're in maybe in our suburb, so we don't have the problem so much, but you know, in America, you know, you're caught in the middle of the train station or a bus station, and you got a daven mincha. You know, in the olden days when people didn't have cell phones, you know, you'd go to the phone booths at Penn Station, and you know, around Mincha time, everybody there was shrub. They were holding up the phone and davening Mincha, long distance calls and the like. But the point basically is that, you know, we get embarrassed, right? So he wanted to teach his Talmidim, don't be ashamed. What's the worst that's going to happen? You'll be a little embarrassed? So learn what it is to be embarrassed and don't let it bother you in any way. Right? Even in a yeshiva, a person can get embarrassed. A person might want to have a long Shemona Esrei. A person might cry during davening. Right? A person's embarrassed sometimes. Embarrassed. People will look at me funny. Right? So we have to get over, you know, embarrassment. This was his issue. Anyway, the story that's connected to this idea, though, that when you give tzedakah, you're really a receiver more than a giver. They tell them the following way. The Alter of Nevardik once went to a town to collect money for his mostos, his yeshivas. And this town had a very wealthy person who, although he was frum, but he was not too generous. He was pretty stingy. He didn't like to give a lot of stuff. And the Alter of Nevardik came to him. He spent a half an hour and he came out with a huge donation. So there was another Rosh Hashiva there. He said, you know, I want to know your secret. He says, I go in every year and I get a little bit. I don't get anything out of this guy. How did you get so much out of him? So the Alter of the Vardik said, I'll tell you the difference between you and me. You come in and you see a beautiful house and you see carpets and you see furniture. So you treat it with so much respect. You wipe your shoes and you don't sit on the couch because you might wrinkle it, whatever it is. So you give the impression that this guy's wealth is really something. You're then asking him to give it up? Nobody wants to give up something that's so precious. He says, I come in, I track mud into the house. I'm not sure if it's true. You know, I put my shoes on the table. I scratch up the table. I give the guy the impression, your wealth is worth nothing at all. It is garbage. But I can make it valuable for you if you give to Torah, you give to yeshivas. So when I ask the guy for money, I'm not asking him to give me something. I'm offering to give him something. Huh? Everybody likes to get things, so he gives me. He says, you come in and you ask him to give. I come in and I offer him an opportunity to take. Because I show him his wealth is worth nothing whatsoever. Unless it is used for Hachzakas Torah. Now, I wouldn't advise, I don't think Rabbi Schiller, you know, will track mud into somebody's house. But this is an example of maybe Nevardic extremism, but it does make the point that wealth is nothing except when it's used for good in the world. And then it becomes a way of Olam Haba. So that's what the Pasuk is saying, that the one who is generous is not just helping others, he is getting blessings because he's given his bread to those who need it, and bread, of course, is whatever it is, money and stuff for Torah, for poor people, for whatever it is. Okay. Now, the Vilna Gaon brings a few. So this is a beautiful pasuk, and it's an important pasuk to remember. But the Vilna Gaon brings a few additional interpretations. First, he mentions that Yaakov Avinu himself, he brings from a medrash, is merumas in Tov Ayin. Yaakov is called Ayin Tov or Tov Ayin. Now, where do we see this? So he says the following. Let's take the two gematrias. The gematria of Tov, which is good, is 17. Right, Tes and Vav is 15, and Bez is 17. And Ayin is Ayin, which is 70. Yud, which is 10, that's 80. And 50 is 130. Now, do you remember Yaakov Avinu's life is divided into two segments? The first 130 years were outside of Mitzrayim. And then Yaakov came when he was 130, and he died at 147. So Yaakov spent the last 17 years of his life in Mitzrayim. So Tov Ayin Hu Yevarech. Who is the Av that has the greatest bracha? Yaakov Avinu, the one, the 17 and the 130, because Avraham had a bad son Yishmael, and Yitzchak had a bad son Esav. It is only Yaakov that was blessed with all of the Shiftei Ka, all of the tribes, and therefore Yaakov is called the Tov Ayin, the one of a good eye, is Yevarech. Right? So that's a drasha. Now, What is his mucker for this? This is old Russia? I'm not sure. It's interesting. It's prefaced in Omru. It is said, or they said, Tovayin is Yaakov. But I'm looking, I have something with, which tries to footnotes, this is a more modern version of the Bear Grub that tries to footnote every source. There's no particular source here, so I'm not sure. The language implies it is some type of medrash, but we're not aware of it. So I don't know. That sometimes happens. Okay. Now, the next is a Gemara in Saita. And the Gemara in Saita says the following. Kol Kohen HaMirvarech Hu Misbarech. This is something good to know as well. No one here is a Kohen, right? No? Yeah, we don't have a Kohen. No Kohanim tonight. Okay. But you know, one of the privileges we have, not in all of Eretz Yisrael, but in most of Eretz Yisrael, that's certainly in Yerushalayim, is that we recite Birkas Kohanim every day when we have a Kohen. And on Shabbos, we do it twice. We do it Shacharis and Musaf. In Chutz Laretz, among Ashkenazim. Sfardim do it every day in Chutz Laretz too, but among Ashkenazim, we only do Birchas Kohanim on Yom Tov. We don't do it on Shabbos or during the week, only on Yom Tov. And the emes is, this is actually a very, very schwer thing, because in Shulchan Aruch, in the Gemara, there is absolutely no linkage at all to Birchas Kohanim on Yom Tov. It's a daily mitzvah. Why would you only limit it to Yom Tov? And the Minhag Ashkenaz is based on something the Rama says. That's a very odd din. That is, it's based on this pasuk: Tov Ayin Hu Yevorach. A generous eye is blessed, but without nikudos, without vowels, Yevorach, which means is blessed, can be read Yevorech. Shall bless. Understand that? See the difference? Yivarech is he shall bless. Yivorach is he shall be blessed. Now, the way the word is read, it says Yivorach, he shall be blessed. And that's the translation we gave until now. But since in Tanakh there are no vowels, right, these words can be read different ways. And there is an interpretation in the Gemara that says, Tov Ayin Hu Yivarech, a generous spirit shall bless others. And this is interpreted the following way, that a remez in Birchas Kohanim, that the only Kohen who should duchen is a Kohen that feels love towards the people that he's blessing. That only a Tov Ayin should say the bracha, but if you're not a Tov Ayin, you should not say the bracha. Now, whether that actually means a Kohen shouldn't duchen, or whether the message is change his attitude, that's a question. But that's the general idea, that a Kohen should duchen only if the Kohen is Tov Ayin, a generous, benevolent, kindly spirit, because then he is the conduit for Hashem's blessing. Okay, now that's in the Gemara. That is in the Gemara itself. But what the Rama does is, the Rama takes that principle and he runs with it to a pretty far degree. And he says, since in Chutz La'aretz we're always grouchy and anxious and not happy, so no Kohen reaches the level of a benevolent, kindly spirit except on Yom Tov. And that's why we don't duchen except on Yom Tov, because the Kohen is not going to be on the Madrega of Tov Ayin Hu Yivarech, only a benevolent disposition. Now, the emesis, the Vilna Gaon himself, thought that the Rama was a very big dochak. He says, what type of business is this? Duchening, when there are Kohanim, is a mitzvah in the Torah. So to make a general rule that everybody in Chutz Laretz is grouchy except on Yom Tov, I mean, first of all, some people are grouchy on Yom Tov. And certainly there are people who are happy during the week. And in Eretz Yisrael, Kohanim are not grouchy, you know. I mean, I don't mean there are some after Kohanim, but whatever it will be. So the Vilna Gaon said this is a very, very schwer reason, and the Vilna Gaon wanted a pasuk as a result. that even in Chutz La'aretz, you should duchen every day. He said the whole Rambam was a duchen, he said. So, but they say that Vilna Gaon and his minion wanted to start duchening every day in Vilna, but every time he wanted to start, the shul would burn down, as if it was a sign from heaven that at least Ashkenazim are not deserving of the sechus of duchening every day. But this does explain an interesting anomaly. You know, the Vilna Gaon himself wanted to come to Eretz Yisrael, but he turned back. He had actually left Vilna, but he did not make it. His Talmidim used to say later that the Vilna Gaon was a reincarnation of the neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu. And just as Moshe Rabbeinu was not zeicha to come to Eretz Yisrael, the Vilna Gaon was not zeicha. But just like Moshe's Talmid Yehoshua was zeicha to come to Eretz Yisrael, so the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon did come to Eretz Yisrael. And especially in Yerushalayim, the Ashkenazic minhagim of Yerushalayim are based on the Talmidei Hagra. That's why the things that we slightly do differently in davening here are based on the minhagim of the Gra. Now, you may say, well, why do we duchen in Yerushalayim if you're an Ashkenaz? So the answer is this. This is one example where the Talmidei Hagra borrowed it from the Sephardim, because since their Rebbe even wanted a duchen in Chutz La'aretz, although he was not able to do so, when they got to Eretz Yisrael and they saw Sephardim duchening every day, the Ashkenazim took it over from the Sephardim, because that was ultimately the Vilna Gaon's Ratzo anyway. But be it as it may, therefore, that is the second interpretation. Tov ayin hu yevorach. And that means, al tikri yevorach, don't read it, a benevolent person shall be blessed, ella yevorech, a benevolent person, a kindly person, shall give the bracha, and that is referring to the Kohen, Berchas Kohenim, and that refers to the idea that the Kohen should love the person. In fact, you see this in the bracha. What is the bracha before davening? You see this. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvah zivanu levarech zamo Yisrael b'yahava. Unusual. Hashem commanded us, this is what the Kohen says, to bless his people Israel b'ahava, with love. Think about that. Meaning the commandment is the Kohen must bless them with love. And that is actually based on this pasuk. Where does the Torah say the Kohen has to love? I mean, besides the general mitzvah of loving a Jew. But where does it say b'miyuchad that the Kohen has to love the people that he blesses? Tov ayin hu yivorach, al tikri yivorach, ela yivorech. A tov ayin makes the bracha. Okay. Now, yeah. I don't remember all the details. I know once, I think they got the message after that. By the way, some people say, by the way, you know, I want to point out that the Ramah didn't invent this minhag. Some people misunderstand it. Some people think the Ramah got up in the 1500s and just said that no more duchening. This was an old Ashkenazic minhag going back hundreds of years before the Ramah. But nobody knew the reason for it. So the Ramah tried to find a reason for the minhag. But nobody should think the Ramah created this minhag. And there were other people who give a different reason for the minhag, which is also a shver reason. A different reason why duchening was discontinued. That is, apparently, this is a classic example of a chumra coming to a kula. Apparently, there were many kohanim that felt they should not duchen unless they go to the mikveh first. Because since duchening was a service that was done in the Beis HaMikdash, and no kohen could do avodah in the Beis HaMikdash until they went to the mikveh, so their minhag was they would go to the mikveh first. What happened was, in some isolated Ashkenazi communities, there were no mikvehs. The mikveh for women was very far away. So people started reasoning, oh, if in order to duchen you have to go to the mikveh, there's no mikveh, therefore we're not going to duchen. But again, very, very schwer. Because Lamaisa, I mean, today, Kohanim don't go to the mikveh. In other words, there's no halacha you have to go to the mikveh. And on Yom Tov, the theory was everybody went to the mikveh before Yom Tov, so the Kohanim were in a state of purity. So there were different reasons that were given. Ultimately, halachically, it's very, very difficult. Halachically, it's very difficult to justify not duchening during the week in Chutz La'aretz. But spiritually, you see that apparently Chutz La'aretz is not worthy. At least Ashkenazim and our Svardim, I guess, are more worthy. That's why, you know, when people like Rav Steinman, you know, Rosh Hashivas, come to America, they will go sometimes to Sephardic shows every day to be able to hear Birchas Kohanim. Because it's a great bracha, it's a tremendous bracha to be blessed by the Kohanim. They are the conduit of Hashem's blessing. Now, there is another thing though. Because Yevorach has a double meaning, Yevorach is he shall be blessed, and Yivarech, he shall bless, the Gemara actually says we have a double reading even Lagabi the Kohen, and that is a Kohen who blesses people with love shall be blessed like a ricochet from Hashem. Kol Kohen HaMivarech, a Kohen who blesses the people, Mivorach, shall be blessed. Because you're reading it both ways at the same time. Tovayin, a Kohen who loves and is benevolent, who Yivarech, he shall give the blessing. And because of that, Yivorach, he will be blessed. So the Kohen gets the blessing as well. By the way, a little consolation prize. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that when Kohanim bless the people, the blessing occurs not only for the people in Shul who are being blessed with the Kohanim, but even the people not in Shul, if they were not in Shul for circumstances beyond their control. So, now that would mean if you're in Chutz La'aretz, even if you went to Minyan, you know, you would still be included in the blessing. But if somebody simply doesn't show up to a place where they're duchening, that he's not bichlal, he doesn't get the bracha. Right? The bracha is for the am that is anusim, the am that is unable to be there. They are nichlal in the bracha of the kohanim. Okay, all right. Now we then come to yet another explanation of yivarech, and this is a gemara in brachas. This is based on the gemara in brachas, and that is the following. Let me just read you the Gemara, and then you'll see how it's connected to this pasuk indirectly. Amru malachei hashareis lufnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The malachei hashareis say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why do you treat the Jewish people so well? The pasuk says, Asher lo yisa panim, Hashem doesn't show favoritism. And yet, you show such favoritism in your love for the Jewish people. This is a Gemara. So Amar Lahem, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Malachi Yashares, V'chi lo'i esa panim li'Yisrael, shall I not show favoritism to the Jewish people? Kasavti Lahem b'Torah, I say in the Torah, V'chata v'savata u'veirata, that you only have to bless Hashem when you're full and you're satiated. And the Jews go beyond that halacha. Hein medaktikim al atzman. They are so medaktik, they're so careful. Ad kezayis, ad keber. Again, let me remind you, if you learn the Sefer Brachos, you know that there actually is a machlokes, Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. What is the amount of bread you have to eat to be chayiv in Birchas Hamazon? One opinion says the size of an olive. That's how we pass it, a kezayis. And the other says the size of a beitza or a beya, that's the size of an egg. An egg is either 2 kezeisim or 3 kezeisim. Okay, without getting into how big that is, a beya is double, either double or triple a kezeis. So Hashem, so it's a mudna thing, that's a machlokes, the halacha, and Hashem is saying, look how medaktek, look how exacting the Jewish people are in their commandments. I just said, don't bench until you're stuffed. And they go out of their way to bench after they eat a beya and after their Yidah Kazayis. Now, the Vilna Gaon, this is a Gemara, and that's why Hashem says, I show them favoritism. Now the question is, though, this. The question is, if this is supposed to be a quote of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem shouldn't say, they bench if they either eat a bay or a kazayis. Hashem knows what the halacha is. In other words, it's as if to say, Hashem says, oh, I don't know what the halacha is, so they either bench with a bay or a kazayis. Hashem knows the halacha. Alright, so how do you understand all of this? So here, he gives a technical answer. Again, I'm trying to remember this answer. And he says that it's not really referring to how much you eat in order to bench, but it's referring to making a mezumen. And here you have to have a couple little bit. This is going to be a little technical. Let me just find this here. Yeah, the Zohar says that I had mentioned before that the ratio of egg or kazayas to an egg is either 1 to 2 or 1 to 3. Meaning 3 kazesim equals an egg. The Zohar gives us a slight adjustment, although we don't possibly like this story necessarily. The Zohar says 3 eggs equal 10 kazesim. Okay, now, if 3 eggs would equal 9 kazesim, then it would be the case 3 kazesim equal an egg. But the way the Zohar has it, it is 3 1/3 kazesim equal an egg. Okay, 3 1/3 kazesim equal an egg. So as a result, 3 eggs is the volume of 10 olives. Now, as I say, halacha, we actually do not paskin like the Zohar, but he's going to use the Zohar to give you an amazing explanation in terms of cheshbon here. Okay, so the Zohar goes with the idea that a kazayas is slightly less than 1/3 of an egg, in the sense that it's 3 1/3 kazayasim that equal, this is volume, by the way, this is not weight, this is volume. Have you seen this? It's not so easy, you'd be amazed. You know, have you seen this book in English with pictures on a kazayas?
Yeah.
Great book. You know, we don't have a good sense of volume. Kazayas is not based on weight. It's based on volume. So because, volume is based on surface areas, so you could have, some things you could eat a relatively small amount of food, and it could very quickly be a kazayas, based on compacted volume. So you squeeze out the air. So now, here's the thing. According to the Rif, I don't know, because the Cheshbon here is so intricate, every time I have to look at it again. The Rif says that a meal that fills you is 3 beitzim. Okay, the Rif uses this word. Right? So it turns out that the amount of food, again, this depends on the person, but on the average, the amount of food you have to eat to be satiated is 3 beitzim, which is 10 kazesim, based on the Zohar. So normally, I'm going to eat, to be full, I'm going to eat, either with bread or other food, I'm going to eat 3 beitzim, which is 10 kazesim. But Am Yisrael always wants to do mitzvahs, the Shem Hashem. So, if I have 10 kazesim, instead of my eating 10 kazesim and benching the yechidus, I'm going to find 9 other people so that everybody can eat a kazayas, and that way we can bench b'mezumen. So, my initial, right? So, what does a Jew do? What does a Jew do when he has 10 kazesim of food? He looks for 9 other people so we can be mezamim. What if Nebuch, I can't find a minyan? So I will at least look for 2 other people so we could have a zima. See, that's the lashon. It says they're medakdek ad kizayis ad kibetza. It's not referring to how much you have to eat to bench. La halacha, Hashem knows how much you have to eat to bench. That's a kizayis. But he says, I take my 10 kizayisim, and first I try to divide it in 10 to have a zimun b'shem. So everybody has a kizayis. And then when I can't divide it in 10, I will divide it in 3. That's the lashon. Yisrael are medaktikim ad kizayis ad kibetza. They first try to divide the kizayis, the 10 zaysim, and when they can't, they'll divide the 10 zaysim, which are 3 eggs, in 3. Right? So that is the idea of Klal Yisrael are willing to give up their own material. That's what the Gemara said. That because they're willing to give up their own material comfort in order to sanctify Hashem's name, that is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows us favoritism. But do you see the diak? In other words, this is a new interpretation of the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't mean, oh, they're medayek to bench when they eat a kizayis or a beya. Hashem doesn't have uncertainty. The halacha is you bench when you eat a kizayis. But it means they're medayek to divide what would make them full. Initially, they want to do it 10 ways. And if they can't do it 10 ways, they'll do it 3 ways. Okay? And that is considered to be the Kiddush Hashem. And that is the meaning of the pasuk, Tov Ayin Hu Yivorech, that he's generous to God because he wants to sanctify God's name by dividing his food. That's the Vilna Gaon's interpretation of Hein Medaktikim Alatzman Ad Kizayis Ad Kibay. But again, I say Lahalacha, it's problematical because to this conversion table, that Ten Kizayisim is 3 beisim, so 1 beya is 3 and a third kizayisim. We don't paskin. We actually paskin that a kizayis is half a beya. The issue of shiur, the issue of quantities, is a very, very complicated shiloh because we're dealing with one of the difficult issues is that we're dealing with a famous psak of the native Yehuda who proves that all shiurim are doubled. So a kizayis today, or a kizayis in the time of Chazal, was double the olives today, so we have to have 2 olives. Meaning to say, everything has to be doubled, because he's learning everything today is only half the size of what it was. So that's why you're going to find these big, big chilukim. Like the Chazon Ish follows that, and the Chazon Ish has very large quantities for what a kizayis is. You know, because I'm supposed to be the size of an olive, so why do I have to eat a whole shmorim matzah? You know, it's not the size of an olive. So, you know, the answer is because of all of these uncertainties. So they tell stories, and it's interesting stories, they tell stories that the Chafetz Chaim's grandchildren do not use his Kiddush cup Friday night because they say it's too small, it doesn't have enough wine in it. Now the Chafetz Chaim made Kiddush over it. Right, but in later generations, the Chazon Ish was much more machmir and shiur. So it raises an interesting question. I mean, so how could we say the Chafetz Chaim wasn't Yotzei Kiddush and the like? So that's why you'll always see, you know, that whenever you look at any modern sefer of halacha that gives you quantities, how many fluid ounces is a revius, how many grams is a matzah, whatever thing you'll get. You'll always see 2 rabbis they're going to quote. They will say, Rav Avram Chaim Noah says small, and Chazon Ish says big. So who was Rav Avram Chaim Noah? Rav Avram Chaim Noah was a gadol, posek, in the time of the Chazon Ish, and he felt that the Chazon Ish was deviating from the accepted minhagim in Klal Yisrael until that point. So he essentially defended, he wrote Sfarim on it, he defended the pre-existing minhagim in a sefer called Shiurei Torah, and Chazon Ish was chaylik. So today, the standard 2 shitas in Shiurim are Rav Chaim Noah and the Chazon Ish.
Rabbi Chazon Ish married Rabbi Chaim Yandel.
No, not at all. The Chazon Ish did not marry into a famous rabbinic family. No, he did not. The Chazon Ish's father was a great rav, but the Chazon Ish did not marry into a well-known mishpacha. Now, the Stipler, you know, again, just, you know, the Stipler, okay, people know today, people don't even know the Stipler anymore, but everyone knows of Chaim Kanievsky. And so Chaim Kanievsky's father was a great, great guy, also the Stipler guy. Harna Stipler was the city in the Ukraine. So the Stipler, who was Nifter around 1985, I think, the Stipler married the Chazon Ish's sister. That's why the Chazon Ish is Rav Chaim Kanievsky's uncle. Right? Because, and it was very interesting, in a way, the Chazon Ish didn't have any children. A few things. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky was really almost the Chazon Ish's son. They were very, very close in that way. And the Chazon Ish, unfortunately, had an unusual, difficult marital situation. His wife was very, very poor health. And she could not take care of him. So his sister, Stipler's wife, was also kind of the Akeres Abayas. So they lived together in the same house, you know, adjacent houses. So in many, many ways, I say the Chazon Ish was extremely close to the Stipler and Stipler's children, and the like. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky, because he was so close to the Chazon Ish, whenever people bring up there's a machlokes, Rav Chaim Noah and the Chazon Ish, Rav Chaim Kanievsky is very upset. He says, you cannot mention them in the same breath, you know, the different, you know, they're not shy to have a machlokes, whatever. Okay, but nevertheless, Rav Chaim Noah was a great paisek, and he came out not like the Chazon Ish. So that's why you'll always see these two different types of shiur. But this is the Tayvayin Yivarech, that a generous person will divide his 10 kezesim, which is a meal, among 10 people, in order that he will be able to be Mavarech as Hashem. This is reminiscent of an old Hasidish story they tell, where a Chassid once went to his Rebbe, a little chutzpahdik question, he says, Rebbe, what's the difference between you and me? He says, you eat a banana, you make Berei Pri Adama. And I eat a banana, I make Berei Pri Adama. I mean, we make the same bracha. You have more kavana, less kavana. What is the fundamental difference between us? So the Rebbe says, I'll tell you the difference. You, in the middle of the day, get hungry. I gotta eat. Where's the banana? Where's the apple? Nebuch, there's a halacha that I can't eat without a bracha, so I make the bracha. But I make the bracha because I want to eat. Says, I'm the opposite, the Rebbe said. The Rebbe said, in the middle of the day, I have this uncontrollable desire to bless Hashem. I have to bless Hashem! But Nebuch, I can't say a bracha unless I have something to make the bracha on. So I look for the banana to be able to bless Hashem. So that's the question. Do you make the bracha to eat the banana? Or do you eat the banana to make the bracha? That's a fundamental nafkamina. What is your attitude? Is the bracha what you need to do? Or is the banana what you need to do? They tell the mice about the Brisker Rav. Now the Brisker Rav spent, he came to Eretz Israel after the Holocaust. But he used to go every summer. He went to Switzerland. He had a nephew in Switzerland. Why did he go to Switzerland? Not because of some vacation, but he had asthma, and the climate in Switzerland was better for his health. So he went to Switzerland. We have many, many pictures of him against the Swiss Alps. All these different things. So the story goes that, and there was like a Haredi hotel. Switzerland has, Switzerland to this day has like Hasidim and Haredim. There's like a very firm Tehila in different cities in Switzerland. Although it's interesting, in Switzerland to this day outlaws Shechita. You're not allowed to Shech in Switzerland. It's very, very interesting. But again, Switzerland is so small, you go 5 miles into Italy and you get meat, but there is no Shechita in Switzerland. But be this may, there was a hotel, and the Balas Abayas and the Balabas always wanted to do for the Brisker Rav, to make him food, to make him this, and he didn't want anything. He was just there for himself, and he was learning. He was not there to enjoy a fancy hotel. But one day he goes over to the woman and says, I would be so grateful if you could get me an apple and a tomato for Shabbos. So she was so excited that she could push it, you know, bring something to him. She didn't know why, but an apple and a tomato, or whatever. So she brings it to him after mincha to add to his shel l'shivus. And he says, thank you, I don't need it anymore. I appreciate it. So what was going on? What was going on is this. You know, a person is supposed to make mea brachos every day. 100 brachos. And if you make a cheshbon, it's not that easy, but because you have, if you look at the Mishnah Berurah, it tells you how you get mea brachos. That presupposes you bench twice a day. But Shabbos is a special problem. Why is this? Because let's take our 3 Shemona Esrays during the week. Because you're counting Ma'ariv, Shacharis, Mincha. Because the day begins from the night. So you have 19 brachos per Shemona Esrei. So just with Shemona Esrei alone, you have 19 times 3, which is 57. So Shemona Esrei gives you 57. You're more than halfway just with your Shemona Esrei. Shabbos, you got a big problem. Because Shabbos, you have an extra Shemona Esrei, you have Musaf. But Shabbos is only 7 brachos. So instead of 57 brachos in your Shemona Esrei, even with Musaf, you only have 28 brachos. Okay? So Shabbos, you actually have a big problem with Mea brachos, and you know, the post can talk about, that's why you take Besamim, that's why you can eat more in Shabbos, you know, L'shem Shemayim, to be Mashlim, Mea brachos, and the like. So listen to what the Brisker Rav said. The Brisker Rav said, I made a cheshben, and with all of my anticipated brachos on Shabbos, I only would have had 98 brachos. So I asked you to bring me a tomato and an apple. So on the apple, I could make Borei Pri Yoetz, and on the tomato, I could make Borei Pri Adama. I guess Borei Nefasha, so I guess maybe he had 97 brachos. This would have given me 3 brachos. No. Maybe something doesn't fit here, but I'll tell you. What happened was, Shabbos Mincha, they called me up for an Aliyah L'Torah. As maybe all he needed was one fruit, because you know there was one fruit would have given him 2 brachas. I was called to the Torah, so I had a before bracha, I had an after bracha. Well, so I didn't need the tomato anymore because I had my mayor bracha. So it's an example. This is mamish, an example of the Hasidic story, where the purpose of eating was to make the bracha. Once he had his brachas, he didn't have to eat. Now there's another part of the story that's a very, very interesting story. The halacha is a very interesting story. And again, it's not so clear if you can learn halachas from Meissen. It was Rosh Chodesh in Switzerland, and one of his sons went over to him very depressed because he says he davened mincha, but he forgot to say yalla v'yavai. So he had to repeat Shemona Esrei. So he felt bad that he was not zohir enough in following, in saying yalla v'yavai. So the Brisker Rav told him the following idea. The Brisker Rav told him, you have a consolation prize. The consolation prize is that you now have extra brachos towards your mea brachos total. Now, this is a very, very interesting psak, if this is a psak. Maybe he just wanted to make his son feel good. Although the Brisker Rav didn't go out of his way to make his son feel good if his son did something wrong. The Brisker Rav is saying, see, we would have thought, if I have to repeat Shemona Esrei, then the Shemona Esrei I davened is worthless. It's nothing. It's non-existent. How can it count towards the brachos if I have to repeat the Shemona Esrei? The Brisker Rav is saying, even an erroneous Shemona Esrei that has to be repeated is lamaisa a bracha, or whatever, said brachos, and it counts towards your mayor brachos. That's a very, very big chiddush, and it's not so pashut that everybody would paskin that way. Many might say that if there's an erroneous Shemona Esrei that you have to repeat, it doesn't count. Right? But the Brisker Rav says it counts. It counts towards Mea Brachos. But be it as it may, this is the illustration of what the Gra is saying here, at least the first part of the story, where the Brisker Rav said, I eat in order to make the brachos. That's exactly the attitude of this person. I have 10 kizais. I have a choice. I can eat the whole thing and I can be full, or I can look for the opportunity to bless Hashem by spreading it among 10 people, and if I can't spread it among 10 people, I spread it among 3 people. And that's the example of Tovayan, a generous spirit, not only towards other people, but towards wanting to do mitzvahs.
By the way, just end here with a semi-related thought. That is, you know, one of the korbanos you bring in the Beis HaMikdash is called a korban toda, Thanksgiving offering. And the korban toda is a bit unique because along with the meat, it's an animal offering, you also bring 40 loaves of bread. 40 loaves of bread. 30 of them are matzah, in other words, not chametz, and 10 of them chametz. That itself is very unusual, because chametz is normally not allowed in the Beis HaMikdash. But for a korban toda, you bring 10 out of the 40 are chametz. And the Nitziv says, why so much bread? You know, why are you bringing so many things here? The Nitziv says, because when you want to express gratitude to Hashem, there is a kiddush Hashem in getting more people involved, because that way you get to proclaim the kindness of Hashem to a public gathering. Now the Torah doesn't want to bankrupt you, so it doesn't say bring 40 korbanos of meat, that would be too much, but at least, you know, you have a little meat people can eat, and enough bread that you can invite a lot of people, because the whole idea is that there's a mitzvah to be mefarsei Hashem's kindnesses in others. That's why the gaimel, bibrichas hagaimel, has to be with the minyan. If you're saved from an accident, right, and you are in sakana, you're mechuyev to make the gaimel, hagaimel, in front of a minyan. Why? Because the mitzvah is to proclaim Hashem's kindness, merabim. That's why Sfardim have a nice minyan, Hasidim too. Before they say Birchas HaGaimel, they quote the pasuk, "Oyd Hashem b'chol leivav, I will thank Hashem with all my heart, b'sod yesharim v'yeta, in the congregation." Because that's the essence. Birchas HaGaimel is to be done in the congregation. Okay, we'll stop here. I'll have a good week. Are these all private, or these are yeshiva? These are... Where is your...